Oh, it's just about that time. It's the Brett Winterbull Show, hour number one underway. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Happy to be here with you on an already, it's a Wednesday. It looks like it's a Department of Defense briefing Wednesday. They'll be doing cleanup on the Millie aisle, I'm sure. And we'll talk later on about what happened in California. No surprise there. And the Nasser testimony as well. Lots of stuff. And we want to certainly talk to you at 704-570-1110. We go out to Breaking Brett Jensen. Brett Jensen is tracking a number of different stories. But this one certainly coming as a surprise to employees in Mecklenburg County. As they're finding out that if you haven't provided your proof of vaccination, well, you are suspended. What's going on with this story, Brett Jensen?
Yeah, it's not even really the proof of the vaccination. It's for everyone who has not been vaccinated. And so there are 5,000 Mecklenburg County employees, and about 70% have been vaccinated. The third been vaccinated, roughly 1,500 people, give or take. That what they have to do, and like a lot of workplaces, they have to get tested once a week. And what they've started doing is today is the first day they started suspending people without pay. Again, without pay for everyone who has failed to upload their test results, all the people who are unvaccinated, who failed to upload their test results into the county database and shows that they've gotten tested and that they're negative. And basically they've had all week to do it. They've had 7 days to upload this data, and if they haven't uploaded that data and they have to do this every week, then they officially started getting suspended today. Now, again, we're talking 5,000 employees, 1,500 people who have not been vaccinated, and that includes the sheriff's department,
right,
the health department, the family services department, parks and recreation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of people.
What was the amount of warning and lead time that they had on this warning? Can you share that with us?
Well, I know they've had over a week to do it.
Yeah.
They've had a week to upload these results.
Right.
And so I assume, and again, I don't have this specific time, but I assume they all knew that this is all right. You've got a week to get these things uploaded. And so they've had 7 days to upload their results. And so today was the last day, or yesterday was the last day. So the suspension without notices started going out today.
What are you hearing in terms of reaction, and do we know what the scale is? Has anybody shown up on Twitter complaining about this information not coming out or anything like that? What about that, Brett Jensen?
I haven't seen or heard anything about that. Again, this really shouldn't have come as a surprise. I mean, again, you've got a week to upload your results, but I will say this. When I spoke to Mecklenburg County Chairman George Dunlap earlier today,
mm-hmm.
he, at that particular point, was unaware of the amount of people this impacted out of the 1,500 that have been that are unvaccinated. I mean, it could be as little as 50 people. It could be as many as 500 people. We won't know until later this afternoon or first thing tomorrow morning.
You know, what's incredible is how across the spectrum, at the federal level, all the way down to the municipal, to the county, what have you, people are using COVID testing as a punitive measure. It's a punishment. That's what it is, right? So you have to go and stick this thing up your nose every week, or you have to get the vaccine. They should have sold it that way to begin with. They should have said, okay, if you want to come back to work, you got to get a COVID test every single week, or you can get the vaccine. And that's a good off-ramp. But instead, typical government, they've done it backwards, and they've wired it in reverse, and they've said, get the vaccine or we're going to make you take the COVID test every single week. And that to me, I think is going to open a doorway to lawsuits, and it breeds cynicism, because the reality is they're trying to check a box to send a report to Joe Biden's office so that they can look like Mecklenburg County played ball. We're right on board, Mr. President. Yes, sir. Right away, sir. Here's our proof of participation. Don't be mad at us. Vi says it's cool. We're all good. Don't worry about it. Rather than actually try to address the issue, which I think is actually really, we're going to suspend your pay. Okay, so your pay's been suspended. Does that make you go pay for a COVID shot now? I mean, pay for a COVID test?
No, I don't think they have to pay for the COVID test. but I can tell you that you know, Mecklenburg County is not alone. You know, the teachers are having to do this.
Yes.
Many companies, whether you're, you know, like us with broadcasting, you know, our company made us have to do it.
Yes.
But again, that's one of 1,000 companies. Companies all over the country,
right,
regardless of what industry or field they are in, are doing this. And this is what they're all doing now. And so, you know, like, again, Mecklenburg County, you had the option.
Yeah.
And roughly 30% of the people have not been vaccinated, so 1,500 people, give or take, and they those who did not upload their test results, which seems fairly simple,
right,
they did not do it, they start getting suspended today without pay.
Oh, well, there we go. Well, we'll track this. We'll follow this. Brett Jensen, appreciate you coming in and breaking it down, man, and let us know as this particular story develops one way or another.
Will do, Brett. Thanks a lot.
You got it. That's Brett Jensen. So there you have it, folks. Yeah, you have the punishments beginning to be doled out. And the reality is this, and this is an important takeaway that you have to understand. If you understand nothing else about the world of governance or government or any of that sort of stuff, government's not your friend. It's never your friend. No politician is your friend. They represent the face of force. They represent the face of force and control. That's all government is. Government is not huggy and lovey and sweet and wonderful like a teddy bear. No, it is an angry house cat that's been stuck in the attic. And when you try to give it a bowl of water, it's going to slice you. And that's what you have to remember about this whole situation. When it comes to government, they are not your friend. They are not your friend. Don't believe the president likes you, the governor likes you, the mayor likes you. They like themselves. They like their power. That's what they get into this business for. And what's important to understand is once you get that kind of linked in, you understand the motivations for everything else imaginable. We're going to take a tour of the big headlines today. We're going to go through all the big stories that are out there moving. And many, 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 many months ago, I said when I first got here, one of the central tenets, one of the central truths I live by is by the assumption that a minimum of 30% of the people in any given setting are crazy. I've upped the number, given what happened in California last night. I've upped that number to probably 35 or 40%. So I want you to remember, when you walk into a room with 10 people or 100 people, four and a half, or 40, 45 are nuts. And that's what's driving so much of the mania in our country today. And do you know what's setting it off? Government. Yeah, I think General Milley could be Mr. Brownstone. He wreaks havoc and gets everybody sick. I mean, that's all I'm saying. He's got guns. Does he have roses? I don't know if he's got any roses. Who would he be in that band? I think, because he said he had white rage and he's into the CRT and the military. I think that General Milley would definitely be Axl Rose, but like 1987 Axl Rose throwing mic stands at people in the front of the crowd watching him. That's General Milley. You can tell he's got a very short fuse. And for my thoughts on this guy, I think based on what I've seen in the overnight hours, he ought to be court-martialed. He ought to be court-martialed, busted down to private and sent to Leavenworth for doing what he did by acknowledging that he told the Chinese that I'll tip you off if there's an attack coming. I mean, I don't know what you call that. Under normal circumstances, I'd call it like psychotic. Under other circumstances, I'd say, okay, can you imagine if you have a guy working at Apple and you've got the new iPhone coming out and he picks up the phone and he calls Samsung and says, hey, I'm going to call you right before we put out the new iPhone and tell you everything that's in it. So don't worry, we're frenemies. Give me a break. So here's the question that Milley's got to answer. And there's a press conference that was just run for about 6 minutes. It ran through the duration of the commercial break. Otherwise, I would have dipped into it. But it was the John Kirby press conference, and the questions coming fast and furiously at John Kirby, who is the spokeshole for the Pentagon, was basically this. Did Milley do this? Did he make these phone calls? Did he intercept? Did he thwart? Did he do these things? And the Pentagon says, well, I can't speak to the validity of the reporting coming from Bob Woodward and Bobby Costa there in the new book called Peril. So one of the assertions that was made, and so what they're doing is they're sending people to the Joint Chiefs of Staff to get the runaround over there. Nobody's going to get any information on this. And Tom Cotton was a little bit shameful this morning. Many of you wouldn't have seen it because it was very early. He was on FNF, and he was talking to the three of them. And when they asked him about the Milley report, he said, well, let me just say that General Milley will be testifying in the next two or three days, and we're certainly going to follow up on that. And Kilmeade about exploded in his seat, like about immolated in his seat, and said, yeah, we don't want to wait two or three days, man. We got to get an answer now, and you're a senator, so why don't you call over there and ask for that? And Tom Cotton was just being intransigent as all get out. But Milley needs to answer this question, okay? At what point, General Milley, did Donald Trump threaten to nuke China? Because I know that the president had his cross swords with the Iranians, and I know he had an issue with the Iranians and the mullahs, a.k.a. the Biden boys, because, you know, they sent him pallets of cash. So I know the president didn't like the Iranians. But at any point, did Donald Trump threaten to nuke China? Somebody's got to ask him directly that question. Were you under the impression that he was going to deploy nuclear weapons against China? The first president to ever step into North Korea to talk to that maniac, Kim Jong-un? Was there any reason to believe that that was the case? Did Donald Trump start any new wars under his administration? I mean, he killed al-Baghdadi and was condemned by it, by the press and, of course, the progressive left. And he also killed Soleimani and was roundly condemned by Joe Biden because, let's be honest, historically speaking, the Iranians are Biden's guys. He was doing that deal with Val Jarrett, and he was doing that deal with President Obama, and they were shipping out as much cash as they could on the back of a pallet to give to the Iranians. So I get that Biden would be very upset if something were to happen, if the hair were to be mussed on the head of Ayatollah Khamenei, right? Because that might upset the Iranians, who are really, I mean, they're right there. They're cheek by jowl with the PRC for Biden. They're buds. So did Donald Trump start any new wars? Did Donald Trump threaten to nuke China? What made you think that you needed to listen to crazy Nancy Pelosi and go run interference and then call the Chinese commander of the military over there and say, hey, listen, we've been friends for 5 years. When we go to war with you, I'm going to call you and tell you in advance so you can expect it. I mean, what American would put up with that? That is not a leftist. A leftist will absolutely put up with that. AOC, totally good with that. Pelosi, good with that. Kamala, good with that. Schiffy, good with that. Swalwell, good with that. All of them, good with that. But regular Americans, not good with that. People are not cool with calling our enemies and saying, hey, FYI, we're coming to get you. Unless, of course, you're calling them as the bomb is dropping. And then that's kind of a cool play. But Milley's not that guy. Milley's a CRT general. And so what you've got to take away from this entire process, and I'd love to get your thoughts, 704-570-1110. Did we just witness the first in American history woke coup attempt? January 6th was an insurrection, they say. What about this woke coup? People, you got to do this. You got to spread the word. Everybody you talk to, everybody you influence, talk radio, what have you, you have got to start referring to what Milley and Pelosi and Schumer did as the woke coup, because that's what it was. And Milley's bragging about it. It belongs in Leavenworth. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Let me jump out and take a call real quick. Stacy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
We've talked a couple of times. What's driving me crazy about the supposed backdoor and mandates and all those things is every time we have this discussion, the discussion's brought about vaccines, it's simply this. This is where the government went wrong. The government went wrong by saying, okay, if you take the shot, you won't have to wear a mask. You won't have to do that.
Right.
Lo and behold, guess what? If you take the shot, you're still having to wear the mask, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
If you take the vaccine, you won't get the virus. You'll protect your family.
Right.
That's not true. So as we went through this thing in incremental steps, every claim that the government has come out with has had to been walked back or been proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the efficacy of the vaccine is now in question. It was supposed to be 90 or 95% for the Pfizer or whatever. Now they're saying it may not even be as in the 60% percentile.
Mm-hmm.
And then I understand the argument is, well, 60% is better than nothing. But the point of it is natural immunity has its place in this process.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Now, have you had it? Do you have natural immunity?
Well, that was my point. My next statement was, instead of doing the nasal swabs to see if you have COVID, why are we not giving people antibody tests?
Well, that's a good question. So when you asked your doctor this, what did he say?
Hey, because I asked him, I said, my wife has had it, my daughter's had it, why can I not do an antibody test?
Right, and what does he say?
He didn't really say. He's one of these doctors that's borderline playing the political thing.
I think you got to ask
about a doctor.
You got to ask. You know, I don't have an MD after my name, so I'm a guy on the radio. I would say your best bet is to have a conversation with a doctor, and ask the doctor why it is you can't have an antibody test, and he's got a reason.
We're not having that conversation as a community. Why is it?
Because I don't think most people
or a vaccine.
Because I think at this point of the game we're so deep into this back and forth, I think people are just ready to move on with their lives. It's not everybody that wants to go get an antibody test. The people who want to get an antibody test should ask their doctor, can I get an antibody test? The people who have doubts about the efficacy of the vaccine should ask their doctor, what's the story with the vaccine? I think all the questions that come into talk radio and TV about this need to be going to doctor's offices. I mean, I think that's probably your smartest bet.
Sure, but the government has got involved.
Yeah, but the government doesn't care. The government doesn't care if you live or die. I mean, let's be honest. You're just a number on a chart someplace. I care because I'm talking to you on the radio. So when you talk about the government, that's like saying, you know, the communists. Well, okay, it doesn't really do much. What you have to do is you have to micromanage your existence, and you have to go to a doctor and say, Doc, this is the deal with my family. Can I get an antibody test? Do I have immunity? Do I have any of this? What's your deal on the vaccine? And get information from them. Now, what's going to happen when we terminate this back and forth is I'm going to get calls saying, I don't trust doctors. So let me preempt that for those geniuses out there that are going to say, I don't trust doctors. Well, you should find a doctor you trust, okay? Because ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to. Joe Biden doesn't care. Kamala doesn't care. Lindsey Graham, Roy Cooper, none of these people care. Their job is to stay in power. And so to think that any politician or any health director in a community is going to give you good information, you got to get it yourself. And that's what people have to, everybody has access to healthcare to some degree, right? You can go to an urgent care. You can call up a doctor. You can go here. You can go. And that's what I think people just need to do. It's just ask people.
But see, if I have immunity, that's not going to keep me from being either having to be swabbed every week.
Well, it's not. That's right. That's welcome. Welcome to government. That's right. Welcome to government. Sets the rules. Government sets the rules. Right. You're not going to get any relief, man. Trust me. There's no relief to be had. There's none. Nobody. There's not a secret pocket of people that have relief. Doesn't exist.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay, man, appreciate it. Thanks, Stacey. I mean, I hate to burst the bubble, but I have to. I could easily sit here behind this microphone and I can lie to you guys, and I can say that's a really good idea. I wouldn't do that either. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know what I say? If you have a spot on your arm and it's kind of changing color and you're worried that maybe you got some skin cancer, it's probably smart to go to the doctor and say, doctor, is this skin cancer? If your insides don't feel right, it's smart to go to a doctor and say, hey, the way I'm going to the bathroom is changing in a pretty bad way. What do I do? You know, you can go on Dr. Google and you can go on Dr. Wiki, but you got to talk to people about your personal circumstances, your life experience, all those sorts of things. Don't listen to people on the radio one way or the other telling you how to live your life, because 99.9% of them are not medical doctors. And so that's the thing you have to understand. And I want my audience as big as it can possibly be, and I want it as healthy as it can possibly be, because I want to grow this audience and I want to be here with you guys for a long time. But it comes down to you having to ask your doctor. Otherwise, all I'm doing is asking you to describe a haircut over the phone. That's not going to work. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Little Bootsy Collins with Delight. Because, you know, groove is in the heart. 704-570-1110. I'm torn here. Let me see here. I'm going to check something out. I know I should have checked it during the break. Let me talk very quickly about what happened last night in California. Not a surprise. I kind of warned you about this as we were going through the program yesterday. I said, listen, here's the problem. The problem is you are outnumbered substantially. You had something like 4 million fewer people show up to vote this time around than at the election in 2020. Many people fled, especially during the pandemic, fled the state of California. And these are the kind of people that you would want in the state of California to push that recall for Gavin Newsom. So here's what's going to happen now. The conversation I'm hearing coming out of California is this. They're going to push a measure to ban, to get rid of recalls permanently in California. So you're going to be stuck with the Democrats controlling that state for the entirety of its future history. Number one. Number two, retribution is going to abound because Newsom's already said he's going to jack taxes. He's got Democrats controlling both bodies of the legislature. Taxes are going to be going up. Poverty is going to be going up. Misery is going to be going up. So what I would say is get ready for a huge out-migration of people from that state who are going to go for greener pastures. And sadly, it's not all going to be conservatives and producers who you know, create wealth and value and things like that. It's going to be people who are going to come looking for the freebies. The good news is, like any sort of a leak under your sink, once you put the paper towels down, eventually the flow does stop. So let's hope it gets not much further than, say, El Paso, Texas, and doesn't drift all the way to us here in the Carolinas. That's what I want to say about that. But Larry Elder, he did what he could do to try to stop this. You can't stop socialists who love socialism. And here's the important point. Because of the massive out-migration of the state of California, what you really have left behind is a large voting block of deadbeats, people that don't pay rent, people that are okay with stealing stuff from stores, people who don't mind the homelessness, people who don't care about qualities of life or children or any of that kind of stuff. So you got a lot of people who are just like, hey, you know what? It's not so bad. I'm all right. It's all good. Where it gets dangerous is the more California teeters towards insolvency. If you've got a President Biden or a President Harris in the White House, there's a greater likelihood that you'll see a bailout going out to the once golden, now tarnished state. Mike is next up. Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, sir.
I just had a quick comment. I heard you talking about, you know, I'm not going to lie to you folks, you know, find you a doctor you trust and all this. And I just wanted to add a story I had. I've taken the vaccine. I'm 55-year-old. I don't have any underlying that I know of, thank God. But back in 2003 or 4, I can't remember the exact year, I had the H1N1 flu.
Uh-huh.
And hit me extremely hard, lost 15 pounds, 14 days.
Wow.
Ran a fever of over 100 for 10 straight days.
Jeez.
I developed a secondary respiratory infection. I was at the doctor twice on some pretty stringent antibiotics. And, you know, I had two small sons at the time, and I was scared. So you fast forward to now, and there's so much rhetoric from social media and which side of the aisle you're on, and, you know, families are fighting and squabbling, and I loved your point. Hey, find you a doctor you trust.
Right.
You know, use your own judgment, because I've had buddies that have really chastised me for my decision taking the vaccine, and I told them my story, and they said, "Wow, I really didn't know that." And so, you know, I love the point, and just love your show, and just
thank you.
Just wanted to put that out there for anybody who has a similar situation.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to take it if you don't want to, and if you don't want to, I respect that absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And look, you there's a way out. There's a way out of it, Mike, and that's to take the COVID test every week, like they want people to take it. And to me, I think as it stands right now, we're probably moving into a better space. I think the news and information is lagging in terms of numbers, and I think we're heading towards getting out of this. I just, it's a sense that I have. I have no way to quantify it because I'm not a scientist, but it's a gut feeling that I have. Kind of like that gut feeling I had that California would stay socialist. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, Buzz.
Hey.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. I was curious, did you see this clip on Bill Maher the other night? He cited a recent poll. 41% of Democrats think the hospitalization rate for COVID positive is over 50%. Another 28% thought it was between 20 and 49%.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually between 1 and 5%.
Right.
It's no wonder everybody's terrified. If I thought the COVID hospitalization rate was 50% for COVID positive, I would never leave the house.
Oh, that's exactly right. And you would have wall-to-wall coverage of news crews in parking lots at hospitals. And
they're wildly misinformed.
They are. And here's let me brag a little bit on Brett Jensen, who is our intrepid reporter and does amazing work on this stuff, because he is always consistently pointing out what those numbers really are. If you watch enough CNN and MSNBC and Fox, and depending on the other channels, you know, you will eventually start to panic and think, oh my gosh, everybody's dying from COVID. It's still a very small number. It's a serious illness if people have complications, but it's still a relatively small. I saw CNN, they ran a stat today. I'll just tell you this, Jason. They ran a stat today. Do you know that 1 in 500 Americans has died from COVID? I mean, okay, so if we spread out 600,000 by 300 million, you can split it that way. I mean, why can't we say per capita by state? It's terrible. We're dealing with it. But a great point, Jace. I appreciate you being out there. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. If you're just joining us, we've had one heck of a first hour. We talked a little bit about the vaccinations. We talked a little bit about the latest out of Meck County suspending pay for employees who didn't report their COVID-19 test results. I had excoriating commentary about General Milley. And, of course, noted that Gavin Newsom won that election last night. One of the other things we're going to get into in just a little bit is this Murdaugh case. This is a crazy story. Alex Murdaugh apparently hired a hitman to shoot him in the head for a $10 million life insurance payout for his son, and that's the guy who grazed his head. You know what was weird? When that story first happened, I'll dive into this real quick. When that story first happened and was first reported out like 2 weeks ago, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, the lawyer came out and said it was not a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And people were like, why'd you say that? Like, why would you say it's not a self-inflicted? Nobody thought it was a self-inflicted. Now we think it's a self-inflicted. But apparently it wasn't a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He hired a guy, allegedly. We have to do allegedly and assume that all suspects are innocent until proven guilty, you know, all that sort of stuff, which is important. I mean, it's an important value that we have in our system. But the allegation is that Alex Murdaugh hired a hitman to shoot him for $10 million in life insurance money. That's according to the SLED, which, you know what I say about the SLED? I think that is the coolest investigative agency name in the entire country. The SLED. Prominent South Carolina lawyer who found the bodies of his wife and son 3 months ago tried to arrange his own death earlier this month so his surviving son would get a $10 million life insurance payout. But the planned fatal shooting did not come off the way he had expected it. The alleged shooter, Curtis Edward Smith, was charged with... Whoa! Do you know what he's charged with? He's charged with a weird charge. He is charged with assisted suicide, insurance fraud, and several other counts of the September 4th shooting of Murdaugh. Murdaugh gave Smith the gun to kill him, and he followed Murdaugh to a Hampton County road, firing one shot at the lawyer as he stood in the road. But the bullet only grazed his head. He was able to call 911 for help. Authorities said Murdaugh's lawyer said last week that his skull was fractured by the bullet. Smith then drove off after the shooting and disposed of the gun. He wanted Smith to kill him so that his surviving son would get his $10 million life insurance policy. Murdaugh was not charged as of Tuesday night, but agents say more charges are expected. Murdaugh said last week through a family spokesperson that he pulled over after his Mercedes SUV's low tire pressure light came on, and a man passing by in a pickup asked if he was having car trouble and then shot at him. So, agents said Smith confessed Tuesday and was charged with assisted suicide, assault and battery of a high aggravated nature, pointing and presenting a firearm, insurance fraud, conspiracy to commit insurance fraud, and shocking, distribution of methamphetamine and marijuana. This is one of those stories where you say to yourself, self, I'm making bad decisions. And now you've paid in all this money and the insurance company is going to be like, you're canceled. You just hired a dude with meth and marijuana to assisted suicide you. You don't get the $10 million now. So now this guy's in a real jam. And what's terrible about this story is that we are more concerned about this yo-yo paying a guy to shoot him in the head than we, has anybody said anything about the wife and the son that were assassinated at the farm? Like, what's the story there? Did Curtis go and do that? I don't want to accuse him of anything, but I mean, is this guy like, you know, in the Rolodex for hitman? You're like electrician, lawn, hit H, hitman. What? How? Honestly, serious question. I mean, I get he works at a law firm, so this is probably somebody you're going to find out was like the cousin of a client or something that had a criminal defense or whatever. How does one approach that in the conversation? Steve, nice to meet you. I'm Joe. Hey, Joe, how are you? Listen, I need your help. Yeah? Is your wife or children, are they giving you some kind of trouble? No, it's me. I want you to just go ahead and take me out. What? I've been to Las Vegas a lot of times. And you do see a lot of human wreckage there in Las Vegas, okay? You'll see like a full-grown man wearing a filthy wedding dress, asking people for money. And he's just honest. He's like, give me money for booze, okay? And you look at a guy like that and you go, that's a guy who isn't just like 10 or 50 or 5,000 bad decisions into life. He's like 15,000 bad decisions into life. This guy Murdaugh, and I get it, drug addiction is a terrible thing. I've seen it up close and personal on a professional level with people who battle these demons. And I would never judge or anything like that. Everybody's got their cross that they have to bear. But that being said, you want to talk about a guy who has this family. He's got the world by the butt. And his family owns this law firm, and his ancestors started the law firm, and he's super connected and powerful and rich and all that kind of stuff. And because who knows what, because we'll have to wait for the true Hollywood story or whatever it is that's going to come out, this guy goes on and does like all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, just think about it. Accused of embezzling, accused of hiring a hitman, accused of asking the hitman to shoot him, accused... I'm going to tell you something right now. If I'm the son that's surviving, like I'm wrapping myself in bubble wrap and I'm going to like Maui. I don't want to be anywhere near where any of this is going on because this is a nightmare. This is like a true nightmare story. And it's easy to like laugh at all this stuff and to look at it. But his lawyer came out and said that he felt that ending his life was his only option. Today, he knows that's not true. For the last 20 years, there have been many people feeding his addictions to opioids. And during that time, these individuals took advantage of his addiction and his ability to pay substantial funds for illegal drugs. And so this is a very, very complicated story that we still have to find out. And see what it is that's going to end up happening here. But this is a really shocking, shocking story. 704-570-1110, Newstalk 1110, 99.3 WBT. All right, so let me show you something here that I think is a very interesting change in the way business is being managed. As you know, there are massive shortages in the labor market for people who are qualified to do certain jobs. For example, I saw a story earlier this morning that said there are states that don't have enough bus drivers to take the kids to school. And there are states like Massachusetts and New York who are now tasking the National Guard to drive buses to take the kids to school. Could you imagine that? You got to take time off your job to go be activated in the National Guard to go drive somebody else's kids to school. And it's not in Tajikistan. It's like just in a different state. Businesses are so desperate for workers. This is when somebody would have typically yelled, how desperate are they? How desperate are they? Businesses are so desperate for workers, they are scrapping drug tests. The global labor shortage has made work perks all but essential for companies scrambling to fill open roles. But in addition to promises of higher wages, flexible schedules, and free college tuition for workers, one hurdle to getting a job is disappearing. In a survey from staffing firm Manpower Group, can't do that anymore. Manpower is no good, right? Human power. 9% of employers worldwide said they're eliminating job screenings or drug tests in order to attract and retain talent. 69% of employers worldwide are having trouble finding people they need, with countries like, hey, let's make some notes here because we may have an opportunity. India, Romania, Singapore reporting a particularly difficult time hiring. The poll results, which include data from 45,000 employers in 43 countries and territories, underscores just how desperate companies are getting. Half of them are dangling money incentives. 20% are offering non-financial benefits, like extra vacation days, or yes, the ability to do certain drugs in the employee's free time. So let me understand this. Mescaline, LSD, and heroin are okay. What's your position on ayahuasca? Well, will you be driving the bus while you're consuming it? Sometimes. We can negotiate that. Maybe a once-a-month thing, and we'll get you a minder. I just don't understand. Would you like to, you know, I love this company. I like to do this. You know what? This job is really going to get in the way of cocaine. And I, you know, here's the thing. I don't need that, but I it's the thing I do. Is that a deal breaker? I also heist banks, but I would never rob this company because you seem very nice. I mean, like, what are we doing? What are we doing? You know, there's going to be the guy that's like, listen, I know you wouldn't know what to look at me. I do a lot of roids, and that's kind of my thing. I know I'm 4'9" and 87 pounds, but I'm building up, man. I got a poster of Lou Ferrigno in my room that I'm really hoping I can bust out like the Hulk. Are you going to be taking the anabolic steroids while you're driving the children around? We don't want to have rage. No. I'm no Mark Milley. So this is what they're doing. They're accommodating. By the way, if you're doing drugs, do not go to Singapore, because I've watched enough of those locked up overseas shows. Singapore doesn't play games. They do all kinds of creative things to you if they catch you with drugs. Like they hit you with like a candlestick, and then they tie you to a tree and make you sit out in the heat, and then they deport you. So don't do that. You don't want to mess with any of that stuff. So stay away from drugs. Drugs are not your friend. Drugs will kill you. And that's what I say. More work hours, no drugs. Jim. Oh, Jim. I don't know if I should even take this call. I feel like, Jim, this might be the end of things, Jim. I thought you people would deliver. You people did not deliver in California. What the heck happened?
Boy, speaking of long-term drug abuse, let's go to Jim in San Diego.
There we go.
Somebody was baked. Somebody got too baked and forgot to. You know what it is? You know really what happened, Brett?
What's that?
This was the most scared electorate I've ever seen. The message is, if you don't get out there and vote for us, we are going to label you an insurrectionist, a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
These people that are established out here, have their lives built out here, have property, have kids that are here, have professional aspirations here, they are scared and don't want the masters, the sitting powers to rain down on them. That is exactly what.
So they voted. They voted no on the recall for protection purposes. What is your exit plan, Jim?
Absolutely, it was an insurance racket. Well, I believe that they are going to start mask mandates, vaccine mandates, all kinds of mandates. He's going to for retribution, to go after those people that tried to unseat him. He's in every way, shape, or form.
Yes.
And it's going to cause what I believe should be called and labeled the second Bear Flag Rebellion. When President Perez of Mexico tried to oust whites and Europeans from California, he just put a flyer on the general store, the light post, everything, saying they didn't have lights, obviously, but on the Fed's post, all whites, all Europeans leave now, because they knew war was imminent. They knew that they were going to be absorbed by the Union. They knew the America was going to build out their empire, sea to shining sea. And they just looked at it. The 33 insurgents that went to the garrison at Sonoma and captured General Vallejo said, "We ain't leaving till we're even." And I believe it is time. Is Larry Elder's right? We will fight on. And it is time. It will be time when Gavin Newsom starts with his mandate for the second Bear Flag Rebellion.
Man, I understand it. I want to believe it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know what this is like? This is like the Alamo, the standoff at the Alamo, okay? Except instead of having the Patriots inside the Alamo ready to fight, the people who are needed to fight are gone, and you're left with people who aren't really committed. And I think it's a really sad reality, Jim. I'm sorry, but I hope you're right. But it's a shame what they've done to that state, and it's a shame what he intends to do to that state. I appreciate your call, as always, 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterble Show. Interesting little tidbit here. 26 states have limited officials' powers to fight COVID. Okay, that's the way they're selling it. There's a review that finds that 26 states in the country have passed laws, and in three additional states, executive orders, ballot initiatives, or state Supreme Court rulings have limited public health authority. This is per the Associated Press. In 16 states, lawmakers have limited public health officials' powers to mandate masks, quarantines, or isolation. At least 17 states have passed bills banning vaccination passports or mandates, and at least 9 states have laws banning or limiting mask mandates. In another 5, the mandates are limited by executive orders. Now, this is causing a great deal of upset among the people whose default position is government is your friend, government will help you, government is what you need, all that sort of stuff. And they're complaining. They're saying, listen to these evil Trump-type people who are opposing the science, and they don't believe in the science the way you're supposed to believe in the science. I disagree 100%. If a legislature wants to give a public health officer or a governor the power to do X, Y, or Z with a pandemic or a natural disaster or something like that, that's great. That's great, because every one of those people who vote for that can be held accountable at the ballot box on some level. But if you're just some unelected county health director, state health director person who's just going to hand down rules of what it is you may do, what it is you may not do, then I'm not good with that. I'm not good with just some little tyrant declaring that they're in charge. Don't you worry about it. Don't you question their authority. And just if you follow and do what they tell you, nobody's going to get into trouble, right? That's the attitude. And I use, for my memory point in this regard, I use the infamous Gretchen Whitmer, who, if you'll recall, during the lockdowns, and she was really into the lockdowns, and her attorney general was really into the lockdowns, they banned you from being able to go into a Walmart and purchase seeds. Like, if you wanted to plant vegetables and fruit, you were not allowed to purchase seeds in the course of your shopping. You were not permitted to purchase American flags. American flags. You were told that you couldn't even go down certain aisles in the Wally World or the supermarket because those were deemed non-essential items. That is what happens when, as I opened in that first hour, this is what happens when you confuse and you think that these politicians are your friend, that these politicians are really looking out for you. The politicians are looking out for their own legacy. That's it. That's what it comes down to. They want to see that they get to keep these phony baloney jobs and avoid having to go into the private sector where they actually have to do a day's work for a day's pay. They want to be wined, dined, and pocket lined with as many people as they can all over the place. They want to be at the French Laundry. They don't want to have to be doing their own laundry. And that's what you have to remember. So Axios and these other outfits, you know, they come out and they're upset and they're saying, I can't believe these rubes and these backward people thinking that you have to be authorized to do these sorts of things. I say absolutely 100% bring it on all day, every day, because if you're going to order me not to go to a certain store, if you're going to order my restaurant closed, if you're going to order this or order that, that power that you have is going to be led directly back to the state legislature. And then we're going to be able to get to go and talk to our state legislatures and say, how come the big blue home improvement store can stay open and the big orange home improvement store can stay open, but the mom and pop shop who sell a lot of the things that they sell, but they don't write as big a check to the politicians, how come they got to stay shut? How come the neighborhood store has to be shut down? The neighborhood grocery, the neighborhood beer store or whatever it is. Why are those places shut down, but the big chains are wide open as far as the eye can see? Well, because, you know, you have a lot more space in those large venues. If you were to go into a small mom and pop hardware store, well, I can 6 feet socially distance while I'm buying a hammer. I mean, come on. Sometimes you just got to get out and get a screw. I mean, that's what you got to do, because you're putting in drywall and you ran out and you don't want to drive all the way over to the big store. So you can go to the small store because it's a lot more convenient to get a screw there. And that's what you're trying to do. And suddenly it's, well, the health director says. I mean, do you remember the stupid health director dictums in our communities in the last year? Remember, you can watch the first half of the football game, but you have to be home for the second half of the football game. We don't want anybody walking the streets. That's right, because the spreading of the COVID walking the streets only begins at 10:32 p.m. on Sunday night. Well, you can make those rules, but they're not going to be by the magical power of Roy Cooper or by the magical power of Andy Cuomo or the magical power of Newsom or Whitmer, or I'll be ecumenical in this regard. All right, the magical power of Governor McMaster. No. You're going to have it attached to something that's structurally checkable, and there is a check and a balance. The American people are the balance. You just want us to write you checks. That's not what we have to have happen here, folks. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Brett Winterbull Show. It's a little white zombie for the people driving around out there. Be patient. Don't get yourself all up in an uproar. We want you to get to and from very, very safely and stay with us all night long. So you saw, no doubt, there was a testimony that was taken today at the United States Senate, and it was surrounding the issues involving Dr. Larry Nassar. This is a guy who was a pedophile and was a predator who was hooked in with USA Gymnastics and of course the Michigan State University, and he was accused by many, many, many young girls and women of being a sexual predator who preyed upon these young girls and women starting at a very young age. And it was all done under the guise and ruse of it being physical therapy and treatment and that sort of stuff. And what ended up happening was these gymnasts were so terrified and afraid to come forward because they knew there would be a cost to their career And so today you had a number of them come forward to testify. Ali Raisman came and testified. Simone Biles came and testified today. It was a heartbreaking thing to watch and a difficult thing to watch. Not just as a man, but as a husband and as a father and as somebody who understands what precious life means to you when you are tasked with taking care of your children. And the idea that this man would not just be allowed to prey upon these young girls, but would be allowed to do it. And you had an entire group of people who were sort of in charge of looking the other way. It's devastating. It's horrifying. It's awful. And Michaela Maroney, who is one of the women who testified today, and Simone Biles ripped the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Justice Department in their testimony because the FBI mishandled abuse allegations brought against Larry Nassar and then made false statements in the fallout of the botched investigation. So Michaela Maroney said they allowed a child molester to go free for more than a year, and this inaction directly allowed Nassar's abuse to continue. Maroney told the Senate Judiciary Committee, that would be Senator Durbin's committee, after recounting the vivid details, she provided the agent interviewing her about Nassar's abuse. What is the point of reporting abuse if our own FBI agents are going to take it upon themselves to bury the report in a drawer? And that's what happened. Maroney and Biles were joined by Maggie Nichols and Ali Raisman, who were also among the hundreds of athletes assaulted by Nassar, the former USA gymnastics team doctor who's now serving a several decade prison sentence. Biles testified and said, "It truly feels like the FBI turned a blind eye to us and went out of its way to help protect USA Gymnastics and the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee," Biles testified while holding back tears. "If you allow a predator to harm children, the consequences will be swift and severe. Enough is enough. That is the message that needs to be sent," and she's 100% right. Now, allegations into Nassar were first brought to the Federal Bureau of Investigation in July of 2015. Several violations of protocols led to months of delay, as captured in a scathing Justice Department Inspector General report released in July of this year. FBI officials, and this is what the FBI did, failed to respond to the Nassar allegations with the utmost seriousness and urgency that they deserved and required. They made numerous and fundamental errors when they did respond to them, and they violated multiple FBI policies. Maroney identified herself as the gymnast that was described but not named in the report who spoke to the FBI about her allegations in September 2015. The agent who took her interview violated key FBI procedures and made false statements in a summary the agent wrote of the interview. She and others criticized the Justice Department for its decisions. Essentially, the FBI hid this case. Maroney said, "After telling my entire story of abuse to the FBI in the summer of 2015, not only did the FBI not report my abuse, but they eventually documented the report. 17 months later, they made entirely false claims about what I said." That sounds like something else, doesn't it? Does that sound like something else? That sounds like something we have heard before. So who was in charge of the FBI in 2015 when these allegations were brought? Who was the head of the FBI? I'll give you a hint. He took power over the FBI in 2013 and would leave the FBI after being fired in 2017. Does that ring any kind of a bell with you guys? Jim Comey. The very guy that deep-sixed evidence that exonerated Trump from being a part of a Russian collusion nonsense thing, the same crooked FBI guys covered this up. Why is Jim Comey not being brought in to testify? Why is Jim Comey not facing a potential legal jeopardy as a result of this? These are children. These are underage girls who are being abused by this system. James, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, this NASA thing. When you started talking about it, the first name that popped into my head was Jerry Sandusky.
Sounds very much like it.
Yeah, because it's the same thing. Somebody reports it to a quote-unquote higher-up.
That's right.
And the next thing you know is when the dam breaks years and years and years later.
Yep. That's exactly right. It's a great analogy. It's very much like the Jerry Sandusky case. So what do? They bring Christopher, they bring in the current FBI director in to testify today. He's got nothing. He can't say anything because he just took command of the FBI in the last number of years and says, you know, we're doing better and we're going to fix this and we're going to make it all right. Fact of the matter is, people need to go to jail and be held to account for covering up for a child predator like this guy. Disgraceful. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you. Our phone number is 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. And we got a lot of stuff to cover. I got some stuff that is a little bit. You're not going to hear this in a lot of other places, but I think it's interesting to talk about some of this. And let me give you an example of one of the things that I think is particularly fascinating. So you know about Afghanistan and what's going on with Afghanistan. And you also know that there is a debate about whether or not we're going to give the Taliban money. They want $600 million. They want right now is they want $60 million from the United States, but they want $600 million from the United Nations, and we're the big funders. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Well, guess who stepped into the breach to say, yeah, you know what? You ought to pay the Taliban their money. Pay the man his money. It's the People's Republic of China. China stepping up to pressure us to pay the Taliban. The Chinese government issued a statement and they said, we stand ready to maintain communication with the new Afghan authority. China has yet to say whether it will recognize the Taliban government, but has been actively courting its top officials, hosting a delegation led by its political leader, Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, in July, shortly before the group swept to power amid the withdrawal of U.S. forces and the mass exodus of Afghans, fearing a return of the Taliban's hardline Islamic rule. Well, China has been very critical of the United States' efforts and of the nature of the pullout. And while wary of the rise of radicalism on its western border, it's been generally supportive of the Taliban, seen as defeating its strategic rival, the United States. And so now China steps up and says, you know, we haven't made a final decision about working with the Taliban, but America, we feel like you ought to pony up the money and go ahead and give it to them. Now, why does this matter? Because China is on the UN Security Council, which means they have the ability to veto resolutions, just like we do, just like Britain, just like France, just like, who am I leaving out of there? Oh, the Russians. The Russians. So China has the ability to cause big trouble with our foreign policy if they so wanted to. So they're leaning on the Biden administration to make good on their promise that they are going to pay the money to the Taliban. Yesterday, we played you that soundbite, that long soundbite from Rand Paul, in which he said yesterday, don't give them the money. In fact, we ought to deduct $70 billion from what we were going to give them, because the fact of the matter is they got all of our equipment, all of our gear. That's United States property that was sent over to the Afghan National Army, and that ought to measure for something. But unfortunately, that's not the way the game is played. You know that, and I know that, and that is a shame. That is an absolute shame that the game is played like that, and that you would have China show up and start to shake us down. It's very disturbing. Sierra Card is an assistant professor of psychology at Georgia State University. She published earlier today a new study under the conversation heading over at Yahoo News. The headline reads as follows. Brain scans of black women who experience racism show trauma-like effects. putting them at higher risk for future health problems. Black women who have experienced more racism throughout their lives have stronger brain responses to the threat, which may hurt their long-term health, according to a new study that this author, Sierra Carter, conducted with clinical neuropsychologist Nijar Fani and other colleagues. She said, I was part of a research team that for more than 15 years has studied the way stress-related trauma exposure can affect the mind and body. And in our recent study, we took a closer look at a stressor that Black Americans disproportionately face in the United States, she said, racism. My colleagues and I completed research with 55 Black women who reported on how much they'd been exposed to traumatic experiences such as childhood abuse, physical or sexual violence, and to racial discrimination and experiencing unfair treatment due to race or ethnicity. We asked them to focus on a task that required attention while simultaneously looking at stressful images. We used functional MRI to observe the brain activity during that time. They found in this study that Black women who reported more experiences of racial discrimination had more response activity in the brain regions that are associated with vigilance and watching out for a threat. It's called the middle occipital cortex and the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. Their reactions were above and beyond the response caused by traumatic experiences not related to racism. Other trauma research shows this kind of continuous response to a threat can increase the risk of mental health disorders and additional future brain health problems. Black Americans continue to suffer from health disparities, including being disproportionately greater at risk for stroke, cognitive decline, and neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease compared with white Americans, although research has consistently demonstrated that the chronic stress of racism can get under the skin and leave a biological residue of enduring health consequences for Black Americans over time. Little research has explored the impact of racism on brain function and health. I bring this up because I think this is going to be, I've seen a couple of these studies that have popped in the last couple of months. This is going to start to take form and shape as part of the 2022 election, because you're seeing the fight for equity as it's been described by people who are in the movement when it comes to education. This, I think, is going to become a large part of the conversation in the 2022 off-year election, because this is going to be something that the Biden administration and their allies in the Congress and the Senate can galvanize around as the next big fight. Because really, what you're essentially looking at here is a case that's being made for disparities, a case that's being made for a lack of equity, and the one thing that the Obamacare advocates have pushed for the most, which is a large, strong, robust mental health approach. And I think what we're seeing here is the beginnings of the foundations of that debate. And I think we're going to hear a lot more about this. Just want you to put it on your radar. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Oh, now all of a sudden, President Biden is starting to push back against the communist Chinese, huh? CNN with the breaking news. Biden and allies announced new plan to push back on China, assist Australia in acquiring nuclear-powered submarines. Look, I'm not gonna fault any American administration for getting tough on China. I'll not fault them at all. By the way, Bo Thompson's going to be away today. We will catch back up tomorrow when we do our Crossing the Streams. He has a commitment. But here's the thing. I'm not going to come at President Biden for us getting tough with China. It's been way too long since we got tough on China, and I'll take that all the way back to the Trump administration. We should have been jumping ugly with China as quickly as we possibly could. But excuse me, a baking powder? This is crazy. Suddenly now we're going to get the Australians a nuclear-powered submarine. What about the $85 billion in stuff we just basically gave to China via Afghanistan? No, I don't know. Why would I know that? I'm sorry, I'm being asked a question here. Why would I know that? What? Oh, okay, it's a fair question. All right, so I'm getting this question. Will Mark Milley call the Chinese general and tell him don't worry, even though we're getting tough on you, we're not going to war. I told you I'll call you before we go to war with you. I'll let you know that we're going to war. I like that. It's like putting it, it's like making it all nice and legal, like in the international affairs. So who calls? Mark? Can you imagine it's Joe Biden? Mark, I need you to call the Chinese and tell them we're about to get really tough on you. We're giving the Australians a nuke, but don't worry about it. It's cool. We're not really going to war with you. Just give them the speech you gave last time. Wow. It's just unbelievable. So this is the new story pivot. So just so you're following at home, Afghanistan collapses. You have the 9/11 commemoration. The 9/11 commemoration is supposed to get rid of the Afghan collapse story. Then you go from the 9/11 commemoration, you go to the Milley book, you go to the Blinken testimony, you go to the stuff that's coming out of that whole narrative that's spinning. Then you throw in there some climate change and hurricanes. That's another whole dynamic that's going on out there. What they're trying to do is spin as quickly as they can. And CNN literally has this as their headline. Breaking news. U.S., U.K., Australia announced new pushback against China. What does that mean? Let's go to the phones and check in with Brad, who is up next. Brad, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for having my call. I'm just listening to your narrative about the psychological disorder folks are getting from, constantly, racism or whatever is causing this response.
Uh-huh.
But it seems like you would get that same disorder, whatever it is, I can't remember what you call it, from waking up every day and having the news and the radio and the TV telling you you're a victim and everybody's racist and everything that's said and written and spoken and done is racist and Dr. Seuss is racist. And
well, here's... Here's how it goes. They're saying people who have experienced trauma that they then are testing by using a research tool, a brain scan, an MRI or brain scan, to see how your brain is reacting to certain images that are replicating the stress. The fact is she acknowledges in that summary of that study, the professor acknowledges that there's been very little research done in this end of the field. So what I think this is an appeal to say we want to do more of the research. And likely, if you do more of the research, you're going to then want to do a remediation. You're going to want to do something to fix it. And so my concern, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a brain surgeon, I'm not a brain scientist. But what I am is somebody who looks at the way... certain studies are then used to push political objectives. And that's why I'm talking about this study that we were just referencing in that last segment. It's over in Yahoo News is where the summary is posted. Brain scans of black women experiencing trauma gives them long-term challenges that they have to then deal with. And so That's what we're looking at here. So I'm looking at this from a public policy standpoint, and I'm looking at this from a politics standpoint, because I do believe you're going to have to come up with a new selling point in 2022. The selling point of bad orange man or any of that kind of stuff, or the former guy that President Biden likes to call him, that's not going to move the needle. It's going to have to be something that's much more specific and much more empowering or attractive in terms of selling a point. And it's important to understand when you want to change a political system, you have to sell your idea. The Green New Deal, the notions of climate change, global warming, whatever terminology you want to use, they started selling that in the early 1970s, and that only finally caught on in the latter years of the Clinton administration. The folks on the left have a very, very long time horizon. People who are conservatives, people who are free market types, Republicans, what have you, have a much shorter time horizon, because oftentimes the policies are not about changing public behavior or changing the way it is you do things. It's usually geared towards making markets more efficient and reducing regulation. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, debunked a claim made by rapper Nicki Minaj that the COVID-19 vaccine can make men impotent. Fauci dismissed the claim as false when asked about it during an interview Tuesday on CNN. There's no evidence that it happens, nor is there any mechanistic reason to imagine that it would happen. So the answer to your question is no. Fauci went on to talk about the dangers of vaccine misinformation. There's a lot of misinformation, mostly on social media. The only way we know how to counter the misinformation is to provide a lot of correct information. So you have this back and forth going on. You'll know Nicki Minaj from her big-time hit, Starships. And she made the erroneous statement on Monday in a series of tweets explaining why she skipped this year's Met Gala. No, that wasn't a party for the baseball team. Stop it. In one post, the rapper who said she tested positive for COVID herself told her fans she didn't want to put her baby at risk. Minaj and her husband, Kenneth Petty, welcomed their first child together last year. She went on to say that they want you to get vaccinated for the Met. If I get vaccinated, it won't be for the Met. It'll be once I feel I've done enough research and I'm working on that now, she said. She said, you got to wear masks. She also said the story of her cousin's friend in Trinidad who got the vaccine and became impotent. And apparently it wasn't that he became impotent. It was apparently because he had swollen testicles, which I don't know how she would know that. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. I'm going to pivot completely away from the world of politics and back and forth with the political parties here. I want to talk about something that I think is just really cool and very interesting all at the same time. And if you don't like sports, I don't know what to tell you. But the fact of the matter is, I think this is a cool story. So here goes. Raise your hand. Well, if you're driving, don't raise your hand. Raise your hand if you are familiar with Deion Sanders and what Deion Sanders is doing these days. All right, he's a coach at the Jackson State football team. All right, he left the NFL Network and all the TV stuff and media stuff, and he felt a calling to go and coach the young men who are playing football at Jackson State, which I believe is an HBCU. I think one of the HBCUs. They are going to be playing Louisiana Monroe on Saturday. Now, Jackson State is a small program. It is a smaller school. Louisiana Monroe is a bigger program, a bigger school. So they're going to play, and Deion Sanders says he's ready to make a statement against Louisiana Monroe on Saturday, even if history suggests he won't. Normally, you just get paid to go get beat, right? Sanders said Monday during a conference call with Southwestern Athletic Conference Media. That's really the goal, right? Somebody pays you. Your program makes more money that will than normally go to the program, but you go there to get your butt kicked. His answer? Yeah, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. Jackson State University is 2-0 and is seeking its first win against an FBS program since, I hope Boomer's listening because he's going to love this, since 1978. They haven't beaten FBS program since 19, they think. Like they can't go back and totally figure it out. That's according to NC2A.com. When it faces ULM 0-1 at 7 p.m. Saturday night in Monroe. Louisiana Monroe has lost 12 straight games. Tied for the longest losing streak in the nation, Jackson State has emerged as one of the premier programs at historically black colleges and universities. The juxtaposition makes Saturday's game a viable double-dip opportunity for the Tigers, who will be paid $350,000 for playing the game, win or lose. According to the game contract obtained by USA Today Sports, Jackson State will earn $350,000 when it returns to Monroe for a second game in 2024. Normally, when you play a powerhouse, like I see some of the HBCU schools have taken, it helps build the budget, but it kills the morale, Sanders said. How can getting your butt kicked, help you as a team? Financially, cool. All money ain't good money, said Deion Sanders. An HBCU program hasn't scored an FBS upset since 2018. When North Carolina A&T beat East Carolina 28-23. I remember that game. But the feat is becoming more common overall at the FCS level, which includes all the programs from the SWAC. Sanders signed the highest-rated recruiting class in FCS and HBCU history in 2021, with national recruiting ranking 44 spots ahead of University of Louisiana Monroe, according to 247sports.com's composite. None of that has changed his approach to Saturday's game against the Warhawks. Quote, of his guys, if they don't practice, they're not going to play. And if they don't perform well in practice, they're not going to start, Sanders said. That's how we go about practicing. The thought process of building up to Saturday, Saturday starts today, man. It doesn't start on Saturday. It starts today. This is exactly why people love sports. Okay? This is why people love sports. It's why I love it. Because, and this is why college football is so special. College basketball is too, but college football is so special because I don't know if anybody went to Jackson State. I don't know if anybody went to Louisiana Monroe. Let's just say, like, they don't have a big national, rooting section. You can watch this game and feel like this is a really cool thing to watch happening. You can enjoy it. You can enjoy it, and you're probably, between these two programs, this thing is probably going to be pretty smash mouth. And what happens if Sanders goes, and now they're 3-0, if he wins this game against Louisiana Monroe, and he might, they'll be 3-0. That starts to become a Cinderella story. That starts to become a very special story. Remember, I've talked about him in the last couple of weeks. Last week, he was showing off one of his players' jerseys, and he was saying, listen, why can't we just put the names of the players on the back of the jerseys? I'll pay, whatever it is for the jerseys to get the names on the back. I want my players to feel like they're part of something special. This is the transcendent nature of sports. I never played sports in any kind of a substantial, big-time way, okay? I always did it for fun when I was a kid. But when you're part of something bigger than you, a unit that's bigger than you, a team that you're accountable to, that's special. That is special. That makes you feel something. And it's something that you carry with you your entire life. I would argue that much of the crisis of the current culture in our country today is due to the fact that we now live in an everybody wins a trophy culture rather than rewarding achievement for hard work. There he is, approaching the microphone, the gold microphone, the platinum microphone.
I think it's Dirty Silver, actually.
Love that. I like that name. That sounds like a really good stage name. Ladies and gentlemen,
Dirty Silver with the news.
Oh, that is awesome. Print that, okay, there, TJ. So we got Charlotte at 6 coming up here, not with Dirty Silver, but with terrific Mark. What's coming up?
Well, we got a busy hour ahead. Mecklenburg County cracking the whip on employees started suspending unvaxxed county workers today without pay if they had not submitted a negative COVID test.
Mm. Do you think they do the old radio trick where the key card doesn't work when you show up?
Yeah, that's a good question, yeah. We'll also talk to a lawyer who says, look, if you're fed up with your employer's mandates about taking the shot, there's not a lot you can do to fight it.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Charlotte police have arrested a slasher who was randomly attacking people with a knife. He killed one man, apparently just picking people at random.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
You know that new Woodward book, yes. Shaking Up Washington, America's Top General, worried that Trump might start a war. Today he was talking about it. We'll go to Washington. That's an amazing story.
That thing is incredible. The idea of calling the general on the other side of the table and saying, I'll let you know if we're going to hit you.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
New iPhones and Apple Watches are out. You going to buy one?
No.
Got $1,000 lying around?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, hold on. We get that cookie.
You're a wealthy man. You do 3 to 6. You know. Yeah.
Hold on. Let me call Dirty Silver.
The Apple Watch is kind of cool, though. It can check your blood oxygen level.
That I like.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
I like.
That's a big deal with COVID.
I know people who would appreciate it checking their blood alcohol level.
You know, I wonder why they haven't thought about that.
Shh, don't tell them.
Now Anna's going to run out and buy one. 6:35, success at 6. We'll visit a funky little grocery store.
Oh, yeah. All right. Does it have a particular type of cuisine with it?
You name it, they've got it.
I'm in. Yeah. All right. Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6.
Dirty Silver on his way.
Bring it on in here with the Spurs. That's it. That's you know what? It's I think stuff like stores that have like all kinds of different varieties, I like them a lot. Anybody can go like to a supermarket and get. I want to be able to go into a store and I want to be able to purchase. I want to purchase something from Slovakia. I want some ghee and a very obscure beer that probably was stocked in 2008 in that freezer. You know, I like those kinds of places. When I one of my favorite things to do in the entire world, and I admittedly I haven't done it in a million years, just going and getting lost in two places, bookstores and record stores. Like, you want to talk about When you're young or, you know, single or just newly married or whatever, and you have time on your hands, you go, oh, I'm going to go to the record store and I'm just going to go climbing through the racks and see what they have. Or the bookstores. Awesome. As much as it's great to have Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whatever, you know, delivers your stuff like instantly, there's just nothing like finding a book that you went into a section that you didn't realize and then you're sitting there looking. Like for me, for my money, honestly, I got thoughts on Millie here in a second. I love maps and atlases. I've loved maps since I was a kid and atlases and all that kind of stuff. And I always wanted to be the kid whose house was in the crease under the staple in the atlas. And then I realized that the pages kind of actually, if you spread them out, they kind of replicate the spot that the staple is in otherwise. Because I always wondered, you know, that must be a sad place to live. General Milley is going to have himself a very busy future here. I don't know if he's going to be in the Joint Chiefs of Staff for much longer, but I'm going to tell you about a story that just flashed across CNN. Once again, they're spinning up the Biden foreign policy. I told you that. The Biden administration has announced that they're going to get tough on China, right? Air quotes, tough on China. And they're working with the UK and the Australians, and they're getting the Australians a nuclear sub and all this kind of stuff, right? Well, lo and behold, what do I just spy with my little eye? A story about Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un has been going at a pretty rapid pace just for the last, like, 10 days. He's been testing weapons. In fact, I got to get Dr. Bechtel back on the show to talk about North Korea because that's starting to jump off. So they've tested a cruise missile. They tested another intermediate missile. And now they're claiming they have a railway launchable missile. And the fear here isn't that it's just a traditional ballistic rocket. What they're worried about is that it's the sort of thing that can deliver a nuclear payload. You have to remember, this is hugely important. This is how it ties back to Milley. It's hugely important to understand that the other part of the equation with the Iranian nuclear deal has nothing to do with Afghanistan or China or anything. It has to do with Kim Jong-un, because it was the North Koreans who were operating as the field lab for the Iranian nuclear program. So if the North Koreans have weapons, nuclear weapons, a deliverable nuclear warhead, that means that Iran is pretty close. And how does Milley fit back in? Well, Joe Biden has lusted for a nuclear deal with the Iranians forever. And it's bitterly ironic that we're starting to see these countries angle for supremacy in that part of the world when this is the one-year anniversary of the Abraham Accords that Donald Trump was able to pull off with the Middle Eastern countries and Israel. And now we go from certitude and alliances and strategic hemming in of the Iranian regime. And what do you have 1 year later? You have stories of General Milley tipping off the communist Chinese that he'll tell them if we're going to hit them for some reason. You have General Milley and a Pentagon led by Lloyd Austin, who are now going to be responsible for bringing Americans out of Afghanistan after the collapse and the surrender. And what is Anthony Blinken going to start pivoting over to? Sucking up to the Iranian mullahs, paying them lots of money so that they'll be good little boys and girls. The reality is, they may already have a nuclear weapon. So you're not going to be able to deproliferate them. You're not going to be able to tell them, no, lose the technology you had originally. We tried that once before with Muammar Gaddafi. And when Obama and Biden decided they were going to kill Muammar Gaddafi, that's what spooked all the other countries into developing their nuclear weapons programs. That's what drove Kim Jong-un to get a nuke. Biden and Obama. And now you know the rest of the story. Good day.